everybody. Welcome to the Buckeye Weekly Podcast. I am Tony Gerdeman, here as always with Tom Orr. Tom, how's it going?
Tony, I feel like we're speedrunning the Georgia season at this point. We're doing these rewatch shows, and we're already in, I think, late October, early November. I think this is the early November. I think this is the game that was happening when I was getting blown from at Ryan Field to Kansas when Ohio State was playing Northwestern. So yes, this is we're zipping through it pretty quick. Hard to believe.
Yeah, Georgia Tennessee is the game that we watched for today's show. Kickoff the date was 11/5, November 5th. And, you know, weather got a little dicey here. They had some sprinkles there in the second half, and I'm sure it was very comparable to watching the ball blow around in Evanston, watching signs come flying off of the stadium walls and bashing cameramen into the head. And I'm sure it was very, very similar there in Athens.
Yeah, it did. You know, you said sprinkles, and then they showed the shot, you know, the shot you always see with the stadium lights in the back where you can really tell how hard it's raining. It's like, that looks like more than sprinkles, because they described it as a light rain, and it was like, that's not quite a monsoon. That's not raining as hard as it was in Evanston, but that's raining pretty hard.
Yeah, and then you see everybody, all of the refs, their hats are just soaked, and all of the players are soaked on the sidelines, and so it rained pretty good, and then it stopped for, I think, maybe the fourth quarter, but obviously didn't really have anything to do with the outcome of the game. So as we do with these shows, we go back and forth with five things we've each learned or jotted down, taking notes on. So Tom, I went first last time. I feel it is your turn to go first this time.
This isn't really my first thing, but I think before we get into this, I think we should sort of note, this to me feels like the most relevant game of the ones we're going to review. We're going to go through five games, and it was Oregon and Missouri and Tennessee, and then we're going to do we're planning to do Kentucky and LSU as well. Those felt like kind of the five most most relevant games, and a couple of good ones, a couple bad ones, and this one to me feels the most related to Ohio State, where Tennessee's got a real good quarterback, a real good wide receiver, solid run defense, not very good pass defense. I mean, am I wrong there, did you have the same thought?
No, I can see that. One of my points that I won't even really get into just yet was it just felt like Tennessee was a little overwhelmed by Georgia's physicality, and so maybe that does go right into an Ohio State offense type of thing. But yeah, because I mean, you can, and that's what we do when we do this. You picture everything that Ohio State could do or would happen to them against Georgia through this, and there's a lot there. And yeah, I could see that, Tom.
So, you know, related to that, this was Tennessee putting on an absolute clinic of here's the things Ohio State can't do against Georgia, and false starts. Like first drive, they had a first down, then a false start, and immediately it's first and 15. Then it's third and five, another false start. Then it gets to third and 10. Then they throw 5 yards short of the sticks on third and 10, settle for a field goal after getting a short field to start the game. It was just, this was every, that like sequence of four plays was everything Ohio State can't do on offense against Georgia in that Peach Bowl. And I think everything that Ohio State fans are a little bit concerned that they might do in that Peach Bowl.
Yeah, that was one of the things I have written down as well. There was even, I don't know, if I say there were six false starts, is that about right? I didn't go back and count them all, but that's not an exaggeration, I don't think. It's not like an over-exaggeration. But there was a false start at one point where the ref hadn't even spotted the ball to be snapped because Tennessee was bringing in a sub, so the ref was like, can't snap it yet. And then the right or left tackle, just freaks out and starts, you know, dropping back into a pass protection. And these guys were rattled. I don't know if they couldn't hear anything. The crowd was obviously very, very loud. And that's another thing that Ohio State's offensive line and offense as a whole is going to have to take care of when it's is it going to be 60-40, 65-35, crowd in the Peach Bowl? But the lack of composure on the offensive line with all of the false starts, I was pretty jarring. And the fact that it just kept happening and happening and happening. And there were plays where plays would almost be over and the ref would be like, no, there was a false start, come back. You know, because like you couldn't hear stuff. I was just really, really, really shocked at how there was no composure on that offensive line for Tennessee.
Well, I think that's maybe a function of teams have just not played that many hostile road atmosphere games over the last couple of years. You know, you went through 2020 and there were no full stadiums, and 2021, you know, maybe you play one or two, but that, you know, this is at most the, maybe the third true, really hostile atmosphere. And I know every week in the SEC is one of the most incredible dominant. Okay. Like, I'm sorry. Going to Vanderbilt does not count as a hostile atmosphere. Going to Missouri is not really a particularly hostile atmosphere. It's just, you know, that was a hostile atmosphere that was on par. I mean, that certainly felt like that was maybe on par with the whiteout or a big game in Ohio Stadium, you know, where you have the 95,000 people, 100,000 people. Stadium is built to sort of hold the noise in, and you get that. And, you know, Tennessee had done that against, had played in that kind of an atmosphere against Alabama a few weeks earlier, but they were the home team. So the crowd's being quiet when you're on offense. So to go on the road to that kind of atmosphere is just something that doesn't happen that often, and it has happened even less in recent years. So yeah, Tennessee just looked completely unprepared for that. And, you know, Ohio State has played in hostile atmospheres this year, so I don't think that's going to be quite as big an adjustment for them. And you know, I mean, like you said, it's going to be at most, what, 65-35 Georgia, something like that, 70-30 Georgia. So I don't anticipate that being quite as big an issue for Ohio State in the Peach Bowl. One thing that has been an issue all season for Georgia is fumbles. And again, first drive of the game, there were Georgia almost turned it over once. Stetson Bennett hit a Tennessee linebacker right in the hands on a first down throw. He's looking for Darnell Washington and just didn't see the guy dropping underneath him. And he missed his throwing window and hit the guy, and he had to kind of reach over to the side just a little bit and couldn't quite catch it. But then Daywon Edwards fumbles it. And, you know, we talked the last time about Georgia being a little bit fumble prone, and they put it on the ground again. And it feels like you're going to maybe get one fumble on average from Georgia in a game. They fumbled 16 times this season, lost 10. Just for comparison's sake, Ohio State has fumbled 9 times and lost 4. So, you know, that's something where, you know, you talk about the things that Ohio State can't do. Well, here's something that Ohio State needs to do. They need to capitalize on the turnovers. They need to get a turnover. Force one of those fumbles, recover it, you know, one or two, and then you need to turn them into touchdowns. You can't kick field goals like Tennessee did off of that one.
Yeah, that was a ball don't lie type of thing. You throw the near interception that gets dropped, and then a couple, like one or two plays later, they fumbled. They lost 2 fumbles in this game, and I think they lost 2 in the last game we watched as well. And yeah, I mean, if you can get that, you take that all day. But it is interesting that it happens. I wonder if it's because they play so many running backs and it's hard for a guy to get going, or if the reason they play so many is because they all fumble. I don't know. You know, what is the reasoning behind this? Because we've seen now, Kendall Milton fumbled last time that we watched on the 35-yard run. And in this one, you had Edwards fumble. So I don't know if it's a situation where you just... They all fumble, and that's why you're churning through so many, or what? But definitely something to watch. And Ohio State, first off, tackle, and then maybe try to punch the ball out. Don't start punching the ball out in lieu of tackling. While we're talking, I guess, about the Georgia offense, let us discuss the lack of deep shots by the receivers. And Arian Smith caught like a 51-yarder or 52-yarder, and that was the longest pass completion of the year to a Georgia wide receiver. He is the only Georgia wide receiver to have a reception of 40 yards this year. They've now got Brock Bowers has 2, and Kenny McIntosh has 2, and then Arian Smith has 1, and you look at Ohio State, like Marvin Harrison has 6, Emeka Egbuka has 5 40-yard receptions, and just the fact that they don't have that kind of deep explosion at wide receiver is something that we've talked about, how they get the ball to so many other guys, and so it's not something that really holds them back. But in a game like this, where you only score 27 points, I think it does kind of hold you back. And I was really impressed with what Tennessee did to Bowers. What do you have, like 3 catches for 20-something yards? I've got the box score right in front of me, but he was not anything big in this one, and I don't even think Darnell Washington caught a pass in this one. So I thought they did a pretty good job. Now, Ladd McConkey, 5 of 5 for 94, and Kenny McIntosh, the running back, 2 for 57. But like Brock Bowers, like I said, 3 for 27. Like, they did a pretty good job, and yet you still have 257 yards passing for Stetson Bennett, of which I think 200 or so, 180 or so, were in the first half. 226 yards passing in the first half, 257 total for the game. So like 31 yards passing in the second half when Georgia was just trying to run the clock out. And watching this game on YouTube, the first half took forever. The second half flew by.
Yeah, it was very much Georgia had a 21-3 lead and kind of went, well, I don't think Tennessee's going to move it to 23, so we're just going to get out of here. And they kicked a couple field goals after that, and that was it. But yeah, Arian Smith was an interesting guy to me, because he catches that 52-yarder, and it was like, wow, I don't remember him doing that much else this year. Let me look up his stats. Do you know what he finished with, Tony, in terms of stats for the season?
No.
Guess how many catches he had this season.
11?
3. Guess how many yards he had this season. And then bear in mind, you just saw 52 of them. How many yards did he have this season?
I'll say 62.
66, Hader. His career, 8 career catches for 254 yards, 31.8 yards per catch. He's never had more than one catch in a game. They targeted him 3 times all downfield in this one. He seems like he is there. If he's in there, just assume he's running a straight line down the field. He has 8 career catches, never more than one in a game. They are 31, 55, 6, 61, 35, and then this year, 7, 52, and 7. Now, he had ankle surgery in August, so he missed a chunk of the season. But, you know, he's someone who, you know, isn't going to be a factor unless he is. And if he is, it's going to be a really big play downfield. Georgia didn't hit all of their shots downfield, but they hit, you know, they hit that one. They hit the one to Bowers right after the safety. Speaking of ball don't lie, to McConkey on the out and up on the play after the worst missed replay call since the 2019 Fiesta Bowl. The out and up there was. That was just like the universe going, nah, man, you're owed one here.
I still am baffled how that play, and I don't even know if we can really explain it, but Hendon Hooker drops back into the end zone, is getting sacked, fumbles. One of the offensive linemen picks it up, gets tackled in the end zone, fumbles it to the half-yard line where it is recovered by another Tennessee offensive lineman, and they spot it for a fourth down. And it's going to be a punt from the one. But then you go back and look at the replay. That offensive lineman is down, completely down, with the ball in the end zone. And rather than calling it a safety, they're like, nah, play stands. And I just don't know how.
Yeah, that was the replay guy, or the rules, you know, the rules guy. I don't remember who it was, Gene Steratore, or whoever it is for CBS. Basically was like, what? What? And the announcers were saying that, you know, it was like of the possible outcomes there, like that was the one that was like the least likely. Like there were, you could make an argument for several other things that, oh, maybe it wasn't a forward pass. Oh, maybe it was maybe he was down. But yeah, that was just like, what? I know officials like statistically don't call as many safeties as they should. That's something that they're inclined to give you the benefit of the doubt in terms of getting out of the end zone and forward progress and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, that was pretty egregious. That was also set up by maybe the single greatest punt. That was set up by the single greatest punt in history, 75 yards that rolled out at the 1 yard line. Their punter was okay the rest of the game, nothing remarkable. That was like the clouds parted, the angels sang, and he hit the most perfect punt in history.
Yeah, first off, I don't know if this safety was worse than the Texas-Alabama safety at the start of the season that should have been a safety. But this, I also wrote down that that was the best punt ever by Brett Thorson. And I used to think that Australian punters were the way to go. But apparently this guy, Thorson, I assume he's Norwegian. I think you got to start looking into these Norwegian punters.
Yeah, that was pretty remarkable. And that was just the three phases of the game for Georgia all looking just incredible. Because you had the punt out at the one, and then the defense absolutely stonewalls Tennessee and should have had a safety. And then the next play on offense, they hit a, 40-something yard touchdown on the out and up to McConkey. It was just
37.
Like, yep, there are the three phases of the game. Oh, 37, okay. There are the three phases of the game all working exactly as they're supposed to. The one thing on the other side of the ball in terms of downfield shots, like we were talking about earlier, there were balls there. There were Tennessee receivers behind Georgia defenders three, four, maybe five times, and Hendon Hooker overshot them every single time. It wasn't, you know, oh, he missed wide left, oh, he missed wide right. It was just, nope, he threw the ball exactly three yards farther than he should every single time. And that's, you know, you're going to have to, Georgia's red zone defense is really good. You're going to have to hit some long ones and, you know, get the 40-yard touchdown so you don't have to try and do it in a confined space against them. You're going to have to do that once or twice. And that's going to be one of the real defining things. Can C.J. Stroud make those throws if the receivers are open like that? Because I think some of the receivers can get open like that. It's just a matter of making Georgia pay if and when that happens.
Yeah, that was one of mine as well, because there were at least three that I remember, two that should have been touchdowns. One was to Jalen Hyatt, where he was open by 3 or 4 yards and then got tripped up after the catch or after the pass, and really looked like he twisted his ankle he turned an ankle by stepping on the ref's foot, and I think it kind of bothered him the rest of the game, but that should have been a touchdown. I think it was, I don't know if it was Cedric Tillman or Brew McCoy later on, had one where he got behind the defense, and that should have been a touchdown. And so it's a two-touchdown game at the end. Those are two touchdowns that Tennessee didn't execute on. And that's one of my points, is you have to hit the open shots against this Georgia defense. And if you don't, then now you have to go, instead of picking up 50 or 60 yards the quick way, now you've got to pick up 50 or 60 yards in 8 or 9 plays, where anything can happen on any of those plays that can be bad for you, basically. And you've got to execute over the length of a drive now, rather than just getting it in one shot. And, with Marvin Harrison, Emeka Ebuka, even Julian Fleming, those guys, you have to be able to execute on the opportunities that you get, because you're not going to get a bunch of them. Although there were a decent number in this one that Tennessee normally hits, they didn't hit them in this one, and Ohio State needs to. And if they do, if you get, it's kind of like the Michigan against Ohio State. If you get two deep shots, you know, Michigan gets two deep shots on scores, those are free drives, those are free scores, basically. And it makes your chances of winning go up significantly. So you hit two deep shots. If Tennessee hits those two deep shots, it's kind of like blocking a punt, where your percentage just goes, percentage chance of winning goes way up. And so Ohio State needs to hit those. I think they will have some opportunities, as we saw in this one. There was even one where the tight end got open down the sideline and it was overthrown. And so there are some opportunities, but you can't waste them.
No, you absolutely can't waste them. And one of the reasons that's so important is because of how well Georgia tackles. I mean, how many times did you see Tennessee completes a 6-yard pass, and then it is immediately hit and dropped, and it's a gain of 6. Like, it felt like there were very, very few plays where they got any kind of significant yards after the catch. It was just, the tackling was just so sure for Georgia. And that makes such a big difference in a game like this, because then the pressure is on you to just continue. You have to keep executing those passes. And you're not going to get the big chunk plays on a short, easy pass. Georgia kept throwing, Georgia threw a bunch of shorter stuff that turned into longer gains. Tennessee just couldn't do that. Tennessee was throwing shorter passes that turned into shorter gains, and then they'd have to do it again, and they have to do it again. And if they got a false start penalty, then they were screwed because they kept having to throw these short ones and not getting any yards after the catch. Tennessee was in the red zone, I think, once all day, and they had it. It was at the point where it was 21-3 Georgia in the second quarter, and they had it 3rd and 2 at the Georgia 9. And it was like, okay, so if you get, you know, I knew that they finished the game. You know, they had 6 points late in the game, so I'm like, all right, this is going to go badly. How is this going to go badly? 3rd and 2 at the Georgia 9, false start. 3rd and 7 at the Georgia 14, false start. And then so you end up kicking a meaningless field goal. You know, they didn't throw the ball anywhere close to the first down marker. So you kick a meaningless, you know, you go from 3rd and 2 at the Georgia 9 where you're down by 18 points. You really need to get 7 there, and instead you're kicking a field goal because your offensive line keeps jumping. So it's just Georgia puts a lot of pressure on you to execute things exactly right. And it looks so easy when Georgia's doing it. You know, just like, oh, little wheel route to Kenny McIntosh, and there's another 30-something yards. Just bing, bang, boom. And it looks so hard to do it against Georgia's defense.
Yeah, that was one of mine also, that they trigger so well. You see, like, these corners, there are times where they're playing 10 yards off the line of scrimmage, and Hendon Hooker will throw to a wide-open guy for 4 yards. He'll catch it, and he'll look to turn upfield, and he's being tackled. So they can play so far off, and it doesn't equal a 10-yard gain. It equals like a 4-yard gain, and there's a tackle immediately. Safeties are playing 12 to 14 yards off the line of scrimmage and keeping everything in front of them, and they can do that, and then they tackle. And it's going to create a situation where Ohio State has to have patience. And you talked before the show, or dirt at the start of the show, how this is very similar, reminiscent to what Ohio State is going to need to do. Cause I do expect them to treat Georgia to keep everything in front of them. And we know that sometimes that frustrates Ohio State because they want to take their deep shots, and it frustrated Tennessee as well. But when they did have those deep shots, they didn't connect. And so they have to be able to just, I guess, be patient and take their shots when they can. But knowing that Georgia is just so effective in triggering and then tackling. They're very sound, and it's hard to get extra yards out of them. And so, you know, what does that mean for the bubble screens out wide that all of the Ohio State fans love? Because they tackle well wherever they are. So, yeah, I was just impressed by the secondary and just how quickly they read and react. And they don't need, now they will also play press man, but they don't need to in order to be right up on the ball once it's being caught.
Yeah, there's not a lot of time. There's not a lot of space to do anything. And, you know, I mean, we'll see. Can Emeka Egbuka shake something loose? Can Marvin Harrison shake something loose? Maybe. We'll see. But yeah, that it just feels like this is going to be a really significant challenge for Ohio State above and beyond what they've faced so far this year. You know, and talking about the corners, you know, we've talked, I know you've said a couple times, you've read people talking about Keely Ringo, and, you know, Keely Ringo is secretly bad. And yeah, there was one where he was just one-on-one with a Tennessee wide receiver, and it looked like he was running the route. It was just, he picked it off. This was late in the first half. He was one step ahead of the Tennessee receiver, and, you know, just look back and just track the ball and caught it. It was like, wow, that was an absolutely perfect throw. Just dropped it right into his arms. And, oh, sorry. Well, he's wearing the wrong color jersey. But other than that, I mean, that was, and, you know, he got called for a defensive holding at one point, or pass interference at one point. But that was like Clark Phillips last year in the Rose Bowl had a really impressive interception of CJ Stroud. The Keely Ringo interception was just like, yeah, that looked like, when you look like you're the intended receiver, that means you are playing a pretty darn good corner.
Yeah, he ran that route. I one of my notes here is that Ringo would be hated by Ohio State fans because it is very up and down. Even in this one, he gave up a bunch of short catches, had the pass interference or the holding, whichever one you wanted to call it, and then had the interception. And it's like, I know you could do the interception. Why can't you do that all the time? And the expectation would be like, you need to be perfect all the time. And, you know, obviously he isn't. One other thing regarding how, well, I'll talk about it later, Tom. I'm now through 4 of mine. Where are you?
I have like 17 things. So we'll just kind of get through whatever. Okay, good.
I'll talk now. I just thought Georgia is way more physical in this game. And even as spread out as Tennessee makes everything, it was still contested at the line of scrimmage and won by Georgia. It was almost like a 6-on-6 game for the bulk of this game, and Georgia won that matchup. And Tennessee couldn't make it 11-on-11 enough because Georgia kept winning the line of scrimmage. And then both Jalin Hyatt and Cedric Tillman get banged up. And even while they're playing, Georgia then gets more aggressive because they don't have the fear of those two beating them because they're not 100%. So they get even more aggressive. And they hold Tennessee to 2 of 14 on third down. And they pushed Tennessee around. Tennessee did not look like they wanted to be there at times. And maybe that's why the offensive line was trying to get out of there quicker than everybody else.
Yeah, that was a team that was not ready for prime time. That was Tennessee thinking, all right, we have arrived. We are here. We beat Alabama at home. This is our time. And I think this was right after the first week of the playoff rankings, and they're number one, and oh boy, and oh, it's amazing. And then nope, you were in fact not ready for prime. Oh no, they were number three. Georgia was number one. That's right. But no, it was very much like, welcome to the show, kid. This is not going to go great for you. And it did not go great for them. Georgia is just a much more well-rounded team than Tennessee is. And, you know, it just, you can go through all sorts of stats on them. The one that jumped out to me was they showed a stat on the game that the last team at the time to score a first quarter touchdown against Georgia was Tennessee a year earlier. And then I went and looked. Georgia Tech did it this year. They were the first one since Tennessee in 2021. Georgia Tech did. And then LSU got one in the SEC championship game. So I guess the good news is Georgia had given up a first quarter touchdown in two straight games. The bad news is those are the only two since November of 2021. So that was, they are set up to make you play from behind and get a little bit desperate and then get maybe a little one-dimensional and just sort of have things spiral on you. It's you look at their team and they don't do anything offensively that's just insane. That's just like, this is, 500 yards passing every game, or, they're running for 300 yards every game. It's just very efficient, and they're just waiting for you to make your mistakes. They started the game running the ball so well, and I was like, okay, I got to see how many yards did they run for in this game, because they hit some like 15 yarders or 20 yarders. It was like a bunch of like 12 and 15. They probably had three or four from the first couple of drives. I was like, wow, how many yards did they run for in this game? And they finished with 3.5 yards per carry, which is like exceptionally average, like maybe even a little below average. They're not super explosive. They just sort of execute what they need to execute to get down the field, score enough. And then once they were up 21-3, it was just the like, okay, the fat kid's just going to sit on you for the rest of the game and you're not going to be able to do anything about it.
Well, and even the Stetson Bennett touchdown run on a scramble, 13 yards out for one of Georgia's touchdowns, you have Tennessee comes right through on a blitz, should have brought him down, and he escapes and there's nobody to the right. And that's one of his Heisman moments, where he dives for the pylon and gets nailed in the head and crosses the goal line and scores from, like I said, 13 yards out, where should have been a sack for a loss of 10 or so. Instead, it's a touchdown for Georgia, and it's just another example of, you can go ahead and get after Stetson Bennett, but you better have a plan B for when he makes his move on your move. Like, there has to be if this, then this, rather than just if this and then that's it. That's not enough.
Yeah, and what was interesting to me was Tennessee only had one three and out all day. The third drive was a three and out. That was the one that started at the one where they it should have ended in the safety. That was the only three and out they had all day. But it was just, the drives were 17 yards, 16 yards, 0, 16, 56, that ended in a field goal, 30, that ended in an interception, 25, 12, 43, 61, that was a touchdown right at the end of the game, and then 19 yards on the last drive. So they weren't getting completely stonewalled three and out over and over again, but they would get, pick up a first down, maybe two, and then they would make a mistake. There'd be a drop pass, to be a false start. They get themselves behind the chains, and they once you're behind the chains, once you're off schedule, you're in big trouble against Georgia, because Georgia will just kind of just strangle you, and wherever you throw it, they will be there. They will tackle you, and you have to throw the ball past the chains on third down. You cannot assume, well, it's third and nine, but we're going to throw a 5-yard route here, and as long as he breaks a tackle, like, no, you can't do that. You've got to throw the ball past the chains.
Yeah. I thought Kenny McIntosh showed some Blake Corum on one of those inside runs where he had a couple of double jukes in there, and of course he had some more catches. Two catches, 57 yards, the 49-yarder on the wheel route down the seam. And so they always find ways to get him involved, and 10 rushes, 2 catches. I feel like he's going to be an issue for Ohio State in this game, both in the running game and more specifically maybe the passing game. So that's basically everything that I have. I think I've touched on most everything I've got. What else you got?
Yeah, I would agree with that on McIntosh out of the backfield and Bowers and Washington as tight ends. It just feels like you've got to have, I don't know that Ohio State has enough guys who I would trust to cover that type of receiver, where someone's going to be in a matchup that Ohio State doesn't want them to be in on most plays. So that's going to be a real challenge, no question. I wrote this down at the end of the game, and I wish I had started counting at the beginning of the game, but boy, how many times did you hear Nessler and Danielson saying, now it's too late for Hendon Hooker to try and run? It was just, you know, he's back in the pocket, he's waiting, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. There's nothing there, and then he tries to run, but everything's already closing in on him. Like, it feels like you've got to have first read, second read, go, almost, or you're going to have to just throw the ball into a window that's a little tighter than you want to, because I know Ohio State's pass pro has been pretty good this year, but this is going to be a real unique test, Georgia's pass rush. And they're not an incredible sack team, but Hooker just felt like he was under pressure quite a bit. You're not going to have 8 seconds to stand back in the pocket and wait for guys to come, you know, to run open. You're not going to have that much time. That felt like something that just over and over again, it was Hendon Hooker sitting back there, and he thinks, you know, the clock in his head needs to be a little quicker, because it was just, he would be back there and looking, and then by the time he decided it was time to run, there were already 3 guys around him, and there was nowhere to go.
Yeah, I think watching that at times, some of the routes were just so deep when they didn't necessarily need all of that depth. They could have done some more slants and things like that, but yeah, Georgia had 6 sacks on the game, by far their season high, the most in an SEC game for them by 3 until the SEC championship game against LSU, where they had 4. But they had 4 against Georgia Tech, and that's the only other time they've even approached 6. And I think a lot of that was, you know, obviously coverage sacks and just Hooker hanging out and waiting. But also, that's what we see C.J. Stroud doing, where when he decides to run, it's just a little too late. And you know, it's just so, so important to stay on time, ahead of time, especially probably better to stay ahead of time, because when on that 2nd and 2, when you get that false start and it's only 2nd and 7, you can kind of overcome that. And because there will be some false starts, and you do need to keep it from being a 2nd and 7 is much better, obviously, than like a 2nd and 15. And if it means CJ Stroud runs the ball 9 times for 27 yards just to avoid sacks, you got to do it. And he, you know, he says he's willing to do it, but he also is a very, very patient quarterback with trust in all of his receivers. But I don't know that you can get to your 4th option and expect to complete the pass.
No, I think you've got to have 1-2 go, or 1-2-3 throw it away, whatever it is. But you're not gonna be able to go through all your progressions that many times. That's just not gonna work. So. The last thing I wanted to talk about was Kirby Smart's game management, because at the end of the game, you know, Arian Smith's back in the game, and it's like, all right, this is going downfield somewhere, and it went downfield to Arian Smith somewhere. It was, you know, at this point, it's 27-6, and they were facing a 3rd and 12, and instead of just trying to run out the clock, he's taking a shot downfield to really try and ice the game. And it didn't work, but it was like, okay, that's a good aggressive play call. You contrast that with right before halftime, Georgia got the ball back, and just had this like long, slow march towards towards the end zone and was like very much taking their time. Like they're concerned. They took over with 4:52 left in the first half. Took over at their own 20-yard line and went 12 plays, 78 yards, used the entire rest of the first half. But you got to a point where they were in field goal range and there was like 50 seconds left and they're still kind of taking the time and running the ball and not calling timeouts. And he was Kirby Smart's concern there was very much number one, don't let Tennessee get the ball back. And then number two, anything else. Like he was more concerned with not letting Tennessee get the ball back than he was with actually scoring a touchdown himself. And they just ended up running up too much clock there. And did probably cost themselves an extra shot into the end zone from the 2 yard line at the end. So, you know, I mean, that was, you have to balance all that kind of stuff. But I think that to me is probably a little instructive in terms of how he might try to manage things if he's in that situation against Ohio State, where you're probably going to be a little more deliberate and not, you know, not necessarily try and, you know, squeeze every point out of it and just keep the opposing team from getting another possession there. So, It was a little conservative, but, you know, it was one of those like, yeah, I mean, I get it. I don't agree with it, but I get it.
Yeah. And Ohio State will have to take advantage of any conservatism that Georgia will give them. And Ryan Day has said they're going to come out swinging. So we will see if that actually comes to fruition. That will then do it for this episode. We have Kentucky up next. Is that correct? Yes.
That's the plan. Yep.
And so I'm interested to see what a 16-6 game looks like. Whew, I don't think it can look pretty, but we shall see. Although it may look pretty to Ohio State fans as we relay what we see in that game. So reminder always, you can find us at BuckeyeHuddle.com. Think about becoming a member, check it out, become a member, say hello to us there on the message board. Also find us at youtube.com/BuckeyeHuddle where we will drop all kinds of videos, things like this, live streams, interview sessions. Go ahead and hit subscribe and hit the bell to be notified when any of those things drop. So that will do it for today. I want to thank you all for joining us, and we'll talk to you guys later.